The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to Luke. On one occasion when Jesus was going to the house of a leader of the Pharisees to eat a meal on the Sabbath, they were watching him closely. When he noticed how the guests chose the places of honor, he told them a parable. When you are invited by someone to a wedding banquet, do not sit down at the place of honor, in case someone more distinguished than you has been invited by your host. And the host who invited both of you may come and say to you, give this person your place. And then in disgrace you would start to take a lower place. But when you are invited, go and sit down at the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at the table with you. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. He said also to the one who had invited him, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, in case they may invite you in return, and you will be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. The Gospel of the Lord. Good morning, and please be seated. Hey, has this ever happened to you? You go to the mailbox, and you pick out your mail, and you sit down, and you're going through your mail, and you find an invitation, and you say to your wife or your husband, oh, honey, look, it looks like an invitation, until you take the invitation, you open it up, and it says, oh, look, it's an invitation from John. And she says, is that John from work, or John from the church? And you go, oh, heck, it's John from work. And then so you look at the invitation, so what's the invitation about? And she's just, well, looks like a wedding. Oh, a wedding. Oh, my God. That means we have to see his wife. She's going to be there. And you know how she just goes on and on and on about her sons. And it's just ridiculous. Oh, my God. And so you look at it and you say, well, you know, Harry's going to be there, too. Harry's a friend of mine. And I've been trying to, you know, kind of schmooze up to him a little bit because I, you know, at work and so forth, I figured I want to be able to get a better position. And so maybe one of you, and oh, heck, I don't know. Just having to deal with these people all day long, all the gossip that goes on about work. Forget it. You know what? Let me send this back saying we're going to be out of town. So you send it and you send it back. Isn't that something that you go through when you get an invitation? I mean, we go through this entire inventory about who's going to be there. Oh, what am I going to wear, God forbid? Because if I should wear something that they saw me the last time I went there, it would be just so embarrassing. So forget it. I'm not going to go. But you know, when you're invited to a particular party or a wedding or something like that, you think a lot of thoughts about who's going to go, and what kind of conversations you're going to have, what kind of non-conversations you're going to have, because you know, you have to smile and say, oh, how are you, and all that kind of stuff, and you really don't like doing that stuff. But an invitation is one in which you're brought into a whole community where things are happening, and weddings and so forth are a big one. And during the time of Jesus, when there were invitations offered, this was big deal. This was something very important. It was the social event of the month or the year, possibly. People would come to the wedding or people would come to the feast, and there were lots of things going on. There were contracts that were being made, marriage contracts that were being set up, business deals that were going on, people who were setting up all kinds of deals and so forth. And it was a very important place for people to get in and get the business done. In addition to that, there was lots of gossip. My God, all the gossip that you didn't hear for months, it was right there in that wedding. You know, people would come out and say, did you hear about Mary? Oh, my God, did you hear about John? And so you get all of these delicious chunks of news that you wouldn't get anywhere else. And so it was very, very important for people to go there because they would be caught up in the social etiquette, caught up in all the things that were going on. And so Jesus knew this very well. Where people went and they went to these parties to catch up and to schmooze and to make deals and to be able to kind of rub each other's shoulders and get the information and get to know what's going on in the town. And so he saw people kind of vying for seats, trying to get close to whoever they wanted to gossip with. You know, hey, there's John. I'm going to sit next to John. Let me catch up with Johnny. And Jesus says, wait a minute. You know, this is kind of embarrassing because if you try to pick a seat, perhaps that's closer to the host or someone like that, and the host tells you, hey, this seat is reserved for Mary. You need to move down a little bit. That's embarrassing. That's like a death blow, especially in front of all these people. Because when you see them, you're looked as an upstart, someone who's trying to get ahead before they're ready without earning it and so forth. And so you have to move down. And so Jesus says, well, you know, it's better It's better for you if you go to the lower place, and then if the host comes and sees, says, oh, you know, please, come on, move up a little bit closer, you know, and you go, oh, into the face of people, then you look honorable, right? And then you feel yourself a little better, like I'm more important. See, these are the things that Jesus noticed going on in these, because everybody was schmoozing each other. And believe me, it was the place to be. People needed to, and some of these weddings would last for a long time, sometimes a week, sometimes more. And it would be a wedding and people would come and go and they would exchange all kinds of information. But Jesus realized that this was something that was being held in a way that was more functional than celebratory. And so, did you ever hear the word quid pro quo? You know, that's the word this for that. Okay, I'm going to give you this, you're going to give me that. And Jesus started to see that this was what was happening in these kinds of invitations and in these parties. The people come here not because they want to celebrate the wedding of these two people. They're coming here because they want to get something. They want to bring something and they want to get something. And he noticed that the whole exchange and the whole relationship that they were involved in was a quid pro quo. It wasn't anything authentic. It wasn't anything that was serious. It wasn't anything that was about care or love or celebration or even affirmation of the other person. It was about what I can get from that individual. And he saw that, and he realized that this was the wrong basis by which people should be brought together. And may I want to remind you also that this continues to go on today, right? I mean, when you get invited to your boss's, you know, house or something like that, the first thing you say is, oh my God, what does he want? You know, what am I going to do? How am I going to impress him? Or you know, you got to figure out what in the world is going on and how are you going to navigate this particular invitation. So these are the things that are going on in today where people seem to interact with each other based on the principle of quid pro quo. We see it all around us. We see it in our business. We see it in many of our social relationships. I'm nice to you because God forbid that you should have something against me and I don't get your business. I want to be nice to you because you know what? I want you to make a couple of referrals for me. Get me a couple of clients, okay? You know, I'm a good guy. You can trust me right there. Eric, am I right? Eh? So, I mean, this is what it's all about. It's all about schmoozing and getting along with people so you can always have some kind of business relationship with that individual that ends up being profitable for you. Now, Jesus is questioning that basis as the basis of relationships all around. And so what he does is he gives you a counter example of why invite people to parties or why invite people into your life or why invite people into relationships. And the people that, missed this part, is when people invite you to their party, don't you feel like you have to invite them back? You shake their hand. Oh, this was a wonderful dinner. I'm going to invite you in a few weeks. You know, I'll send you an invitation. You come to my house. Right? That's the way it works. You do something for me, I have to do something for you, right? But it may be only because you do it out of obligation, right? Oh God, it's been a couple of months. I got to invite Betty over. Jesus, I promised I was going to get her to come. So you have this feeling that you have to invite them over as well. So Jesus recognizes that this has become the fundamental basis of relationship for the people in his environment. He said, I don't think this is what the kingdom of God should be like. It should be perhaps that we invite people because we want to celebrate with them. It might be because I want to just know you. It might be because I really just want to celebrate, honestly, something with you without ever wanting anything back for you. Have you ever done that? Give a party for somebody because you don't want anything back from anybody, but because you really want to celebrate? And so Jesus is trying to get his host, because he tells his host, you know, next time you give a party, I think he was probably thrown out after this. When you next time you throw a party for people who can't invite you back. And we don't hear what the host says to Jesus, but I can just imagine saying, well, you know, you don't need to really be here either, so. But he really kind of shocks him. He says to him, you know, you should invite people that, you know, you don't really know and so forth. And so really what we come away with from this text is the question of how and why and what is the basis of the relationships we have with people. Really, look at the relationships you have with your friends or relationships you have in school, because a lot of people are starting school, right? Sometimes, I remember when I was young, I would go to school and the thing that I wanted to do was kind of hook up with some of the cool guys, you know? I mean, I was a little guy, skinny little guy, and some of these guys, you know, big guys with lots of hair, you know, muscles. And I said, let me hang out with these guys if I can. Maybe I can get some of the girls. So what I would do is I would schmooze up to the big guys, you know? And I'd act like big guys. And, you know, after a while, you feel like, you know, you're only playing a game, you know, and after a while, if they see you for who you are, sometimes they kick you out of the group. So, you know, the point is, why do you relate to people? Is it because you want something? Is it because you need something? Is it because you're afraid of something? And I tell you, if you go on that basis alone, what you do is you don't have a real friendship. You have a superficial friendship. You have a friendship of seeming. You have a friendship of acting and of pretending. And a lot of people even fall in love on the basis of those kinds of pretensions. They fall in love because they fall in love with each other, but they're in the relationship because they think something different from the other person that they really are. And it's because we want to be accepted, because we want to be loved, because we want to be included. And that costs us a lot of money, it costs us a lot of time and effort, but when we buy into the system that says you have to be something in order to be someone, you have to have something in order to be someone. And so this is a question that Jesus was raising to his people in his day, which is a question that we can ask ourselves, because we live in a world where we're measured by what we have, by what we do, by the prestige we carry, by the money in our wallets, by the security, by the 401ks, by the, all the things that we have in our lives. Don't we seem to count everything that goes on in terms of how is this going to benefit me? That's tragic. Because you're never going to really have the relationship that you really long for, the relationship that you really desire in your life, because it's based on that quid pro quo. Give me this and I'll give you that. You know? And so today, Jesus is challenging us. What is the basis of the relationship? Can it be really truly compassionate? Because you want to be a helper to that individual. When I was young, we had this tradition in my family. I'm the fifth, the youngest in my family. So I used to be Santa's helper. Okay, don't say it to anybody. I'm embarrassed. But I was Santa's helper, right? And what happened there was, you know, I have four siblings, my mother, and then I would help my mother give out the gifts to everybody else, you know, as Santa's helper. And I would be the last one to open my gifts, you know. Anyway, but the thing was that I was giving the gifts to everybody, and I would, you know. And then as I got older, I realized that that was a joyful thing to do, that it was actually nice to be able to give the gift to my brother or my sister and sit there and watch them open it and be happy with what they got. And I realized that maybe I could wait a little longer to open my gift because, you know, this was really nice to do. And I think that this is the point that Jesus is trying to convey to us, that you are God's helper. You are God's assistant in being able to bring real love and real honesty and real relationship into a world that has gone rapid and crazy with quid pro quo. We need people to give just because they want to give. We need people to love just because they can love. We want people to reconcile with each other because it means something. And that's the gift that you'll get back. I realized, and I really had a hard time when I was reading the text, because at the end, after Jesus says, you know, bring the people that can't give you back, bring the poor, the lame, and all that into your party, and then you'll get a reward in heaven. I said, oh, man, there it is again. I thought to myself, there it is again. And I was trying to wrestle with that. How do I get that into the context? Because it sounds like Jesus saying, if you're a good boy or if you're a good girl, God is going to pay you really nice dividends in heaven. And I don't think that's what he's saying. I think what Jesus is saying is that it's already there in your doing. It's already there present. When he says the kingdom of heaven is here on earth, I think he means that it's here on earth between you and me and the way we treat each other, the way we honor each other, the way we respect each other, the way we lift each other up, the way we see the Lord Christ in each other. And we do it just because it's fascinating to know who you are, just because it's interesting to know what you think, what you feel. You know, we walk sightless among miracles. The miracle of the other person, that singularity one, that person that is in your life or that friend that is next door, can offer you so much insight into life if you really listen. If you're just present to their life, present to their experience, present to what they say, there's a multitude of mystery in that other individual. And we can draw from that by listening and inviting them to come out and share with you. And there's a deep satisfaction. There is a healing process, a deep reconciliation that happens in the relationship that you have with people in that state. But there's certainly the I-it of what Buber speaks, Martin Buber, when he says there's I-it and there's the I-thou relationship. The I-it is about using people as a means towards an end. It's about treating people as though they're objects in the way of your becoming and doing things. And he says that if you treat people as the I-it, the I becomes an it. Interesting. But if you treat another person like a thou, then the I becomes a thou. Because when you treat another person as a valued, existing, precious, unique individual, you feel the quality of presence in that person, and thus you rise up to meet that individual. But in our world, it's nothing about
But using, it's about it's. It's about taking. It's about quid pro quo. It's about what I can get from you. It's about accomplishing business. It's about getting things done. And we miss it. We miss it. Sometimes the greatest hint you get of this kind of I thou is when you come to church. Right? You get a feeling of being valued. You get a feeling of being special. You get a feeling of being, you know, unique. Then you go back into the world and you feel like you're just another number. You're just another person that's running around trying to make a living, trying to compete with the next person and seeing the other as a competitor. Don't you see people as competitors? Threats. Oh my God. He's younger. He's more intelligent. He's got more degrees. Oh my God. He's got more experience than I do. I got to take him down. I got to figure out a way. I got to find his weakness, right? I got to find a way to be better than he is. I mean, really, is that the way to live your life? Is that what you want for the rest of your life, to live this way? To see others as a threat? To see life as scarce? Why not see its abundance? Why not see its richness? Why not see its goodness and live out of that? And then see the other person as a partner. See the other person as your brother or your sister. See the other person as precious and meaningful. And then the world suddenly lights up. And everything makes sense again. And you feel grounded in who you are. Jesus saw this in that one visit to this wedding. How people were running around, positioning themselves, you know, cushioning in and settling in and all that. Do you live your life that way? You know, do you want this way of being for your life? You can change that, and you can change the people around you by doing it. I believe that if you are really authentic in the way you address people, people cannot, unless they're fools, treat you the same way. I think that you become then an invitation for them to really be who they are, at least examine what they have to offer, and that they can then do that back to you. But you can start it. You can initiate it. You can create the context. You can create the relationship. You can create the willingness in the person to be able to want to respond in such a way back to you. And this is what being a Christian means. To bring the light into the world, to be the salt of the earth, to be able to rise up the hopes and hearts of people's minds to see the best they can become. You are the one to bring that along. You are the one to help that happen. You are the one to enrich that. You are the one to create the context for it to happen. And this is what Jesus is saying today. If you do that, the kingdom will be yours. Not at the end, I think in the present. Not in the afterlife, right now. Because there's no greater gift than to see another person for the greatness and beauty that they are. And to be able to touch that and be touched by that. This is what we really long for. This is where the kingdom really resides. And this is what we're being asked to remember you are all about.